Welcome to Disciple City Church Podcast. My name is Jerry Wagner, founder and lead pastor of Disciple City Church in Dallas, Texas. Thank you for tuning in. Our desire is to unleash a family of healthy disciple makers in Dallas to reach the world. God bless you as you listen and consider subscribing so that you can listen to new messages each week. Thank you and have a God-filled day.
My two boys are younger than four. My two boys are still babies. They are babies in my eyes. They are so small and tiny. They're able in a way. They're strong. Sure, they're capable, but they're just tiny and little and sweet. But somehow, even in the midst of all of this like childhood innocence, they're evil. My God, it's crazy. I am witnessing on a daily cadence this thing called sibling rivalry. Maybe you're familiar with it. How many of you have siblings? Anybody in here have siblings? A lot of only children or people who aren't really sure if they want to raise their hand. That's okay. I have two brothers. They're older than me. And I have two boys. And I can tell you from personal experience, as a brother and raising brothers, that sibling rivalry is real. Maybe you grew up in a context where y'all were like kind to each other all of the time, or like you took care of each other all the time. And if that's you, praise God. I'm going to try not to be jealous. But I witnessed Theo specifically. I'm just going to at my son. He'll deal with it in counseling later, and we'll have some reconciliation work that we have to do. But Theo, sometimes I wonder if he even likes Emmett. Man, he polices him around our house. Emmett will start playing with something that Theo wasn't even aware of, didn't even know it existed. And all of a sudden, he's like, no, I had that first. And it's like, how did you have that first? I would love to know. The multiverse lives strongly within the context of my son's soul. And I have taken it upon myself, this responsibility to change that in my kids. So everyone just look at me and say, wow, that guy must be very anxious. And you would be right. I, for whatever reason, just want to help train these little children to love each other. And I've decided to quit. I've decided to call it quits. So I'm telling all of you, raise my kids for me. I am abdicating my responsibility. Thank you for the snickers. Yes, I am joking. But something that I'm learning is that I am more concerned about the sibling rivalry that my boys have than God is. That is something that I am learning right now. It's not that God doesn't care. It's just that he's outside of time, you know, and he doesn't have to get them to school. I don't know. It's lower on his priority list. But God cares that my boys care for each other, yes, but he seems to care differently than I do. He seems to care for them on the whole, like outside of time, as whole beings who are going to live a whole life. He has a very slow pace. He's okay with it taking longer, and I would like it to go faster. I would like less hitting. I would like less crying. I'm learning the long game because I have a fear that Emmett is going to develop a syndrome. I'm going to call it the Emmett syndrome. That's what I'm going to call it, okay? Because I don't know what else to call it. I'm afraid that Emmett will distance himself, that he'll develop a distrust for Theo, that he will self-protect to the point of withholding from his brother. Now, some of this comes from some baggage that I carry where I was too young to experience a normal sibling thing with my brothers. And so I kind of am maybe living vicariously through them. This is group therapy, I guess. I don't know. But I know that it's possible that the Emmett syndrome could happen. And it's something that concerns me. And I'm wondering, not just for my boys, but maybe for some of you, if you have Emmett syndrome. If maybe you have been in relationship with irresponsible siblings. And the mistreatment that you've suffered at the hands of people who love you has maybe caused you to change. If maybe you have a little bit of Emmett syndrome, where maybe you feel this distancing from your community, or you feel this distrust for your siblings, or maybe you're protecting yourself, or you're withholding because you're afraid of the ramifications of letting that gap close a little bit, because you've been here before and you know this could happen again, and you want less hits and less tears if you're 3.5 and 1.5. Which none of us are. But my concern might also be yours. It's this question of who are you becoming? That if you allow the mistreatment of your siblings to have such a deep impact on you that you will be changed, and I wonder if that change will be for the better. If you allow the trajectory of that to hit you in 10, 20, 30 years, who will you become? And will you be who you dream of in your 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s? Or will you become a shell of yourself because you've put yourself inside of a shell in the context of your siblings, and so now there's just a hollow, empty, familial relating that's happening in the context of community? There are some stakes this morning as we get back into this Irresponsible Siblings series. And a question that I want to answer today is, how do I put myself at the mercy of siblings who will mistreat me? How do I put myself at the mercy of siblings who will mistreat me or who have mistreated me? How can I continue entrusting myself to people who've caused me pain? How is that possible? You know, we've looked at our own irresponsibility and then we've kind of extracted that out. But today I want to look at the irresponsibility of those who are around us. Because whether you know this or not, if you've never met me, I'm Ryan. Welcome to Disciple City Church. People will hurt you. You know, it's like, this isn't the best feel-good message. I don't really do feel-good messages. Because life doesn't always feel good. And thankfully, God is with you. And so, Irresponsible Siblings, this series, we've been looking at Genesis, and there are a few things about Genesis. I want to give you three things about Genesis, these themes that are true that we see in this story. One of them is family loyalty. All throughout the book of Genesis, there is this struggle with family being loyal to one another. And if there's disloyalty in the family, that is a threat to this promised seed that will come that's going to deliver the people of God, going to deliver all of humanity. And what does that have to do with God's blessing? Those three things are very prominent in this story, whether you see them or not. But one of them that you know of is blessing. God has said to his people, be a blessing. I will bless you and you will be a blessing to all nations. And so here you see one of the people who is supposed to be one of God's people, who's supposed to be a blessing, undergoing all of this mistreatment. And the question at every turn is, well, what's going to happen? Is Joseph going to continue partnering with God, or is the mistreatment of his siblings going to cut off his connection and his calling? What will happen to Joseph? Is sibling rivalry going to throw everything off? And I have the same question for us. Is that what will happen? So today I have two truths and a choice. No lies, just two truths and a choice, okay? The first truth is about people. The second truth is about God. And the choice is for you. The first point that I have this morning is this. People will mistreat you. I think that I've made that case so far, but I'm going to make it a little bit from Joseph's story. People will mistreat you. I'm looking at, if you don't have a Bible, I would encourage you to grab one or to get your phone out. I'm going to be moving. Some of the passages will be up here, but I'm going to tell you some of them will not, okay? So if you want to follow along, it might be helpful. But picking up in chapter 37, in verse 2, it says, at 17 years of age. So here's something to know about Joseph. He's a normal teenager. No one understands him. You know, everyone's doing him wrong. So we can just skip all of this. I'm kidding. But at the very beginning of chapter 37, Joseph tells on his older brothers. Very younger brother thing to do. And you wonder why your people don't like you. So as a younger brother, I can say, you know, whatever. I'm just kidding. He was just being faithful from a young age. And people who didn't want accountability didn't like it. You know what happens. So his brothers don't really like him. You see it from the jump. A little bit of reason, but not a ton. But then his dad decides, I love Joseph the most. Now, Joseph came from the wife. Look, polygamy is alive in the Old Testament. All right? Don't condone that. It's here, I'm just gonna deal with it. I'm not in any way saying this is good. It's just what was going on at the time. Don't think God was a huge proponent of it, but I think God works through busted people and systems and stuff. As Americans, I think we can all say, like, you know what? Yeah. We see a lot of brokenness, don't we? 2024, hello, okay, all right, okay. It's gonna be a year. Joseph was born to the wife that his dad really wanted to have all along. I wonder if that's why he picked favorites. The reasoning doesn't matter, but he made it really obvious. There was some grandstanding that was happening amongst the brothers that Joseph is the favorite. And you wonder, you wonder like, oh, I wonder how his brothers felt about it. If you look in verse 4, when his brothers saw that their father loved him more than all his brothers, they hated him. All right, well, that's a great place to start. And they can't even bring themselves to speak peaceably to him. Hold on to that. It's coming all the way back around at the end. Can't even talk to the guy. Then God gives him a dream, and his brothers hate him even more for it. God gives him another dream. His brothers are jealous of him. The sibling rivalry here is very different than the sibling rivalry that I experience in my own home. Okay? This is steep, and it doesn't stop there. They're so mad that they plot to kill him. Did y'all see that in the text? They're like, let's just off, dude. And then they can't decide, so they just put him in a pit, and they're like, all right, let's sit around. Y'all ever have siblings that do something crazy and then go back to normal? One time my brother chased me around with a belt, and then I ran out the back door, and he locked me out the house and went back to doing whatever it was that he was doing. That's gotta be abuse or something, man. Did y'all didn't have stuff like that happen? Some of y'all looking at me crazy. Y'all's parents must have raised y'all right. I don't know what happened in my house, but everybody was chasing me with a belt. Lord God. And it shows, right? No, I'm just kidding. Okay. But he's in the pit and they're cooling. They're having a meal. Talking about, like, what do you think we should do with Joseph? That's just mind-boggling to me. Like, to actually get into this text is crazy. What they end up deciding is to sell him into slavery. Wow, that is crazy. One of the things that I think is loudest is that in verse 20, one of his brothers says, let's kill him and throw his body into a pit. We'll say a vicious animal ate him. Also, a vicious animal. And like, what does that make them? Then we'll see what becomes of his dreams. Later on in the book, Pharaoh gets two dreams. And Joseph says, because he's gotten two dreams, God's saying, not only is this going to happen, it's going to happen quickly. And here, Joseph gets two dreams. I have some news for you. If someone wants to kill a dream that God has given you, there is no taking it away. And that was true for Joseph. And I love that they are so entrenched in their own plans that they cannot see the purposes of God that transcend what they are wanting to do. God is so good that he would work beyond all of the forces that are against what he wants to bring about. I can trust a God like that. Even when it's hard, even when I don't feel like it, I can trust a God like that. So they sell him, right? Into slavery. What a thing to do with your brothers. No matter what we've all experienced, I don't know if we've experienced that level of sibling rivalry. Though I'm assuming that we've experienced some hard things out here. But then he ends up at a guy named Potiphar's house. And he's wronged. He's mistreated yet again. And so then he's put into prison. And then he's being faithful in prison. And he asks for someone to make mention of him. And that person forgets about him. At every turn in Joseph's life, the door is getting shut in his face. It would be very easy for me to see Joseph respond negatively to that and be like, makes sense, man. It's a very valid response. For you to feel like people are just always after you or God does not see you, it's tough. And you also have people in your life, some that are probably closer than others, who have caused you some pain. I would imagine that some of us at one point in our lives or another have carried an immense amount of agony, of ache. And all of us, to some degree or another, have struggled to see God at work in those moments in our lives or how he's working in us now, in this moment. And if you're aware of it or not, my guess would be that at times that presents a struggle to you of what it looks like to entrust yourself to siblings. That you're afraid that something like that could happen again. The question, again, is who are you going to become if you succumb to that temptation, to that line of thinking, to that mentality? Though the concern is very valid and your choices are not unfounded, again, think of the trajectory. Think of the arc. Where will that lend itself later? And who will you be who you want to be if the knee-jerk reflex is to simply shut yourself down, shut others out, and be constricted to the pains of your past. Now, I will tell you, I don't have a very great solution. I'm not a therapist. I would presume that therapy could help. Among very many other things, what I know will be helpful is finding solace in siblings who you can trust. You see how the problem could be cyclical, though. So let's just keep moving and see what we can find. The second truth that can help all of us to be family with faulty siblings is that God will be with you. I can't make you a promise that people won't mistreat you. I cannot make that promise. I can promise you that people will mistreat you, which is a little sad. But a promise that I can make you is that God will be with you. No matter what you have experienced, you are at God's mercy before and after anyone else's. No matter what you have seen, no matter who you've been family with, no matter what has happened to you or what you have done, it does not matter. You are at God's mercy before anyone else's, and you're at God's mercy after everyone else's. You can trust that you are in the hands of God, which is great news. And if you only hear one thing, I hope it's that. And that brings another set of tensions. And I want to get to the point where we can see how we could potentially deal with those tensions. But this was true of Joseph. We looked in verse 39 or chapter 39, and two different legs of chapter 39, it says that the Lord was with Joseph. If you look in verse 2, the Lord was with Joseph. In verse 3, the Lord was with him. If you look later on in the chapter in verse 21, but the Lord was with Joseph and extended kindness to him. granted him favor. If you look in verse 23, the Lord was with him. The only thing, the only solace, the only hope that Joseph had was God's presence with him. Remember, God called Joseph to partner with him in being a blessing to those who were around him. And Joseph did not experience any sort of cutting off from that calling because of what had happened to him, because of the mistreatment by his brothers or anyone else, because God was with him. It doesn't matter how mistreated you've been. It doesn't matter how hurt you have been. It does not matter who has come against you. God will never cut you off. Listen, if you are in Jesus, in life and in death, God will not leave you. God will not abandon you. It's incredible news. Say it, baby. Tell me. She likes it. She's with it. His brothers, again, they tried to kill his dreams. It wasn't working. God's blessing followed him when he was in the pit, when he was at Potiphar's, when he was in prison, when he was at the palace. And one of the strongest cases for God's presence in Joseph's life isn't even what happened in Joseph's life. It's what happened as a result of Judah's choices in his life. Judah is a person, a brother, a sibling, who experiences ridiculous transformation over the course of this narrative, and part of the reason for that was because of his irresponsibility. I think sometimes that we think, well, if I remove myself from siblings, I will be able to be transformed in a healthier way. If we avoid our own or the irresponsibility of others, that somehow that will be better for everyone. And what this presents is that God is at work despite irresponsibility. Yours or anyone else's. And sometimes the transformation that can happen in someone is actually a direct result of their irresponsibility. That doesn't at all make anything that has happened good. But it is beautiful. And so if you struggle to believe that God is with you, I want you to ask yourself what it is that you are believing. No answer that you give scares God, and I don't think that it would scare me either. What scares me is dishonesty. If you cannot be honest with yourself, that would be cause for concern. What are you believing and why? Maybe the mistreatment of your siblings has moved you to believing that it's mistreatment from God, which is fair and something that can be processed through. Maybe it's thinking of yourself as though you're not worth God's mercy, that you're not worth his activity, that you're not worth his care or his consideration of you. My encouragement would be to carve out time in your calendar to then excavate all of the intricacies of how you ideate about God or about yourself and get to the very bottom of it. What is the bottom of your belief? And I will tell you that there is nothing more crucial than figuring that out. If you are in a season of struggle, there is nothing I could urge you to do more than that. Someone this week asked, so what should I do? In a similar scenario, what should I do? And I said, they were saying, should I just like sit with my Bible and read more? Their struggle is Bible. And I said, I don't think you need to do that right now. I don't think that's your season. There are other disciplines that God could be inviting you to for you to iron through all of the things that you are thinking. Your thoughts and emotions, your beliefs about God are Christmas lights in a box. And I think you need to do some detangling before you ever try to re-enter into something like that. And they said, I've never heard a pastor say that. And I was like, well, I'm sorry, I guess. I don't know. Don't mean to disappoint you. But if you try to fill your mind and your soul with things to placate your feelings, it is only going to create more of a problem for you. And you may not be able to get to the point of believing that at every mistreatment, God is working to bring good from the evil intent of those around you. Now, I don't think everybody's intending evil for you. don't think that's what's on the table. But what I do think can happen is that we just hurt each other. We think about ourselves, or we think about certain things, or we try to think about someone and we're thinking about the wrong thing. For those who have been in a relationship or who are married, anyone here, hello, does this ring true for you? It's just inevitable. And something that can be helpful is to remember that God is strong enough to work on your behalf despite the irresponsibility of those who are around you. No matter what you've experienced, God is mercifully with you and working for you. And if you can't see it, the last thing that I'm going to tell you before I get out of your hair is this. Meditate on God's mercy. It's as simple as this, and this comes from text. I'm going to point it out for you, but meditate on God's mercy. If you are struggling to entrust yourself in the hands of siblings, if you are really finding it hard to put yourself at the mercy of those who could mistreat you, meditate on God's mercy. People will mistreat you. That is true. God is with you, and the only thing that will fuel you to continue is remembering, is centering on God. If you want to counteract all of the forces that have worked against you or that are working against you now, then contemplate on all of God's consideration for, his consideration of, and his care for you. This is the only hope that we have if we are going to not be like a family, but be a family of siblings who are tempted to irresponsibility in a world full of people, again, probably well-meaning, but just deficient, like we all are, broken, busted, sinful, prone to things that aren't giving you every single thing that you need all of the time. We will not always honor God. We will not always seek the good all of the time. That was true for Joseph, and what he did was center his heart and his mind on God and God's activity and God's care more than the activity of his brothers or anyone else who was around him, which is crucial. That's what enabled him to cope, to continue being faithful. Look at chapter 45. It won't be on the screen, so if you want to see it, you got to go look at it. You know what? It might be on the screen, Waldo. It might. But if you look in chapter 45, I don't think it's going to be up there. But starting in verse 4, Joseph, when he sees his brothers again, he doesn't berate them. He doesn't use it as an opportunity to harm them. Granted, you can go read through chapters 37 to 50 and kind of draw your own conclusions on what you think about that whole testing scenario. But how he introduces himself to his brothers, I think, is so redemptive. He says, "I am Joseph, your brother." That's cold. "I am Joseph, your brother." No matter what had happened, he was still their sibling. Crucial. Incredible. And before he says what they had done to him, he says who he is to them. "I'm your brother." But he doesn't pull punches. He says, "Whom you sold into slavery," right? So he says, "Y'all sold," right? If I, you know, there's a youth pastor somewhere saying, "Stop selling." Like, that's his point. That's not me today. "But the one you sold into Egypt." One time he talks about how they sold him. Verse 5, "Don't be grieved or angry with yourselves for selling me." Twice he references what was done to him. But three times, he says what God has done. "Because God sent me ahead of you to preserve life." Verse 7, "God sent me ahead of you to establish you as a remnant." And in verse 8, "It wasn't you who sent me here, but God." What carries more weight in Joseph's life? What's happened to him because of his siblings or the activity of God? You cannot survive. It will not be possible. You will not be thriving. You will not flourish. You will not see the blessing of God in your life or working through your life, if the activity of your siblings, if the mistreatment of family members around you has more weight for you than what God is doing, how active he is in your life, it is not possible. Joseph gives us a picture of what it looks like to meditate on God's mercy. And whatever amount of mistreatment is weighing you down, my encouragement, add as much as you can, that much more of God's well-treatment. I don't even have a term for it. To counterbalance, to counterweight all of what you have experienced. One more thing to note about the story. You remember I said in chapter 37, his brothers couldn't speak peaceably to him. You may have noticed it. But in chapter 50, verse 21, the last words of the interaction, and he comforted them and spoke kindly to them. The story starts with them not being able to speak to their brother, and the story ends with him speaking kindly. There's such a deep redemption and restoration here. Whereas Jacob and Esau do not have a great ending, you have Joseph and all of his brothers who do have this restoration and this redemption, this happy ending. It's incredible. So incredible. And you might think that Joseph feels a little bit tough to relate to, which would be pretty fair, but I want to direct your attention to a couple of things to show you that it's not just like filling your mind with happy thoughts to try to like get rid of all of the not so happy thoughts. That's not actually what's going on with Joseph. Let me see if I can find it. In chapter 40, I told you, I had to warn you, I'm doing some flipping here. In chapter 40, verses 14 and 15, Joseph says to the cupbearer, when everything goes well with you, show me kindness, mention me to Pharaoh, and get me out of this prison. Okay, did Joseph like being where he was? He may have had a little bit of contentment, but that's not his choice. He's saying, please get me out of here. I want out of prison. And then another quick piece here in 15, I was kidnapped, and even here, I have done nothing that they should put me in this dungeon. I don't get the sense from Joseph that he thinks everything is hunky-dory. He is calling a spade a spade. I don't like what has happened to me. I don't enjoy what my life has become. I have been wronged by people. People are lying about what has happened to me. There has been a mistrial, as a term in my life. This is not right. If you look in the next chapter over, in verses 51 and 52, in the naming of his sons, he reflects that he has had difficulty. His firstborn, the name means, God has made me forget all my hardship and my whole family. There has been struggle in Joseph's life. His secondborn, God has made me fruitful in the land of my affliction. He's had hardship. He's had struggle. Joseph isn't just this character who can't be related to. He has dealt with the difficult things that he's experienced. And lastly, again in verse, I keep saying verse, in chapter 50, verse 20, you planned evil against me. He says that their intentions and their activity was evil. He has not tried to paint over or brush past what has happened. He has chosen to forgive. And so for you, when we look at Joseph's life, when he's in the pit, when he's in prison, I skipped one, when he's in Potiphar's house, and when he's in the palace. And every season of his life, however he got there, whatever he's experiencing, Joseph has meditated on God's mercy. So for you, when you are in the pit, Will you be pitiful, or will you meditate on God's mercy? When someone wants to use you, will you let them take things from you? Will you let them take more from you than what they were after, or will you meditate on God's mercy? When you're down bad, will you be imprisoned to a victim mentality, or will you meditate on God's mercy? When God finally raises you up, when he vindicates you, when you see the shift in what has gone on in your life, when the season changes, will you be able to believe that it was him who has accomplished this because you've meditated on God's mercy? And once again, that doesn't mean that you just pretend it's all great. It's not all great. Call a strike and call it like it is. Be free, but whatever you do, meditate on God's mercy. And the result will be that you will be able to practice family even when it hurts. And it will hurt. But the alternative, it's grim. The alternative is also that we don't ever grow out of or topple idols that God is after in our lives. We see Joseph giving us a picture of what it could look like to move from chasing after security, this sense of I'm protected, I'm safe, I'm impenetrable, nothing can harm me or hurt me, I'm distant, I'm whatever. We get out of Emmett syndrome. We move from security to surrender, the ability to give ourselves up to God and then be in the presence of his family, trusting that he's good enough to hold on to us. We get out of the idol of control, of wanting to manipulate all of our circumstances, to manipulate all of our relationships, to make everything in our lives look exactly how we want it to be. We move from control to contentment. And this is a freebie. Whatever. I am struggling with this one. We move from the idea of prosperity to the idea of purpose. Sometimes all that we're chasing is what we think is the most prosperous life for us. And when someone steps in the way of that or derails that, we think like God must not be in it, not recognizing that sometimes these detours end up bringing us more purpose in our lives. I want to give you one last example. Man, I will never not cry about this. My brothers were so mean to me. So I'm crying. Me and my brothers. That would be funny. They were so mean. But last night, I went to a concert. One of the artists, Donovan Woods, has a song called Next Year. Never heard it before. But I just started crying in the middle of this song. He's talking about building a treehouse with his brother, but for whatever reason, they can't do it. And they say, there's always next year. There's always next year. And I don't get it next year. There's no future for my dreams with my brother. What I would give to go see Manchester United, fly to England and see Manchester play together. They're awful. It's fine. It's a terrible thing. But to be able to go with my brother, to be able to play FIFA just one more time, for him to be with my boys, God! For him to be with my boys. My brother has suffered mistreatment at the hands of our criminal justice system. He was so wronged. We could talk about that later. But he was so wronged. But the Lord is with him. And my brother has been a blessing to so many in Cofield. He has brought so much good and so much life. He's made so many disciples. The evil that has been done to my brother is not good, but God is strong enough to bring good from the evil that my family has faced, and he's just as strong to do the same for you. And I don't get to have these moments with my biological brother, but I can have something I have so many biblical siblings who are with my boys, raising them, teaching them about God, helping us to have something that was taken. God is going to do far more than I can imagine in my family's life, in my boy's life, in my brother's life, and it will not look as prosperous as I had imagined, but there will be so much purpose if I let go and meditate on God's mercy. And I use all of that as an example to say, please, please, just take the Bible's word for it, or take God's word for it. Please try to just take some semblance of my word for it. People will mistreat you. It's bound to happen. But God is with you. He is with you. He is with you. And you are at His mercy beyond anyone else's. So meditate on His mercy. Don't miss Him. Do not let mistreatment bring you to the place of missing Him. Don't let it happen. As we wait to buy a home, and I'm out of your hair. I said that twice, but I'm really out. We were told that we were going to be able to buy a house in Elmwood. I'm not going to give you all of the details, but I was told to my face multiple times that we would be able to buy this house, and we never even got to put an offer in. And it was the lowest that I've been in my faith in a very long time. I was having trouble believing God for good things. This is like a week ago. I'm not making this up. It's so hard for me. I had a dark 2 weeks, and I'm not out of it necessarily, but we've prayed and sought the Lord, and I'm watching Him reconstruct things because I'm not afraid to get to the bottom of what I'm feeling. And my spiritual director was like, "You sound like the Psalms." And I'm like, "Okay, I don't want to. I want to sound like the high points. I'm tired of sounding like the low points." It's hard for me to believe that God is going to bring us into the neighborhood, but I'm in the neighborhood. We have siblings who are allowing us to live with them. It's incredible. The point that I'm trying to make is, at every turn in your life, there will be things that could try to derail you, to bring you to the point of disbelieving God, to doubting. I just want to give you examples, real-time examples. Like, I'm not just up here telling you fluffy stuff. Do the hard work. Let's get this done. And what would it be like if we were a family who was constantly reminding one another to meditate on God's mercy, telling one another stories, testifying to His goodness, so that when we are struggling, when we are suffering, when we are in the pit, we can help lift one another's eyes out of the top of that thing to see a God who's strong enough to work in our lives no matter what.
Thank you again for listening to the Disciple City Church podcast. Until we meet again, Shalom.